I'm Marco Werman with The World. Zora O'Neill writes about food and travel, often for publications like Rough Guides and Lonely Planet. Her new book, All Strangers Are Kin, is a more personal travelogue. It's about learning Arabic. O'Neill herself is an Arabic speaker, studied it for years. But in this book, she takes on a personal challenge, learning to speak Arabic in all its many nuances and dialects, the way it's spoken, not just in one country, but everywhere, from the Gulf States to Morocco.
I wanted to cover all the different dialects because I wanted to talk about how different and multifaceted the Arab world is. And talking about that through language is kind of the best introduction because each place has its own little linguistic nuances and cultural differences, different food, different political considerations.
So I know, thank you, shukran. Thank you very much, shukran jazila. But can you give us an illustration of how different these dialects are?
What comes down in the dialects is usually like the 100 most common words are really, really different. So in Egyptian, you say zayik to ask how you're doing. And in Damascus, you say shlonik, which is, you know, a completely different combination of words, basically, to say, how are you doing?
And they would understand the word, though, if you were coming from another place and you used that. They would just identify as someplace else.
They would, especially Egyptian, because Egypt used to be the dominant media producers across the Arab world. So everybody has watched Egyptian TV. And the funny thing is they associate that accent with high comedy. So it's like I'm a slapstick comedian walking into any other country and saying, Zayik! So...
What about the fact that you are a Western woman traveling solo in the Arab world? What was that like? Did that change any of the interactions you had?
I honestly, it was great. It's kind of a privileged position to be in, especially in my 40s. When I had lived in Egypt in my 20s, I definitely got a lot of attention on the street to it.
Unwanted attention when you were
in
your 20s.
Yeah. A lot of the most hassly aspects of that have gone away, which is great. And as a solo person, you're kind of looked upon like, you poor thing, because nobody does anything alone. So you get invited to things.
And when you kind of presented your thesis for being in this part of the world, how did people react?
Oh, you mean people
that you
I know.
Well, that you wanted to learn Arabic. I mean, were they impressed with that?
Initially, well, when I first studied in college, I was like, I'm going to study a new language, something interesting, because French, you know, was just not interesting enough. And in the early 90s, nobody knew what to do with that. You know, I literally had somebody be like, oh, you're studying aerobics? Great, because it made more sense for me to study aerobics than to study Arabic. So American attention to the Arab world, of course, didn't really start in earnest until 21st century after I had left graduate school and was no longer involved. That's kind of what turned me back to studying it because I felt like people weren't getting this impression of the Arab world that I had gotten from living there in the 1990s.
How hard is conversational Arabic? I mean, are there a lot of shortcuts or there's some cheats that make it easier?
I wouldn't say cheats, but the formal written language is incredibly beautifully complex, and I love all the complexities of it, and so I got very deep into it. And when you speak a dialect, a lot of those grammatical things are tossed aside. But nobody told me that until I was a few years in. I was like, wait, there's an easier way to do this?
Like, nobody told me.
Exactly.
Near the end of your journey in Morocco, you strike up a friendship, all in Arabic, with a woman named Huria. Tell us about meeting her. It's really a kind of a special moment.
Oh, Huria, she's fantastic. I was on a
Tell us what Huria means, because
Huria
that's interesting.
Means freedom.
Yeah.
And I was on a streetcar in Rabat, the capital, and she was sitting across from me, and she just struck up a conversation with me. And I had been studying Moroccan dialect, and I really never got the hang of it, let's be honest. And she rattled off at me, and I was like, I'm sorry. And she switched to French, and I was like, oh, no, dutifully said, like, I don't speak French. And I explained, like, I studied in Egypt, so I don't really understand you. And she switched perfectly into Egyptian dialect. And it was such a treat to have somebody just make that effort. And she had a cousin by marriage from Egypt, so she could speak to me. And she was so outgoing, and she was a working young woman, and she was like, I've got nothing to do after work, like, call me tomorrow, we'll hang out. And she invited me to her grandmother's house and to her mother's house. And
you guys have like a pajama party in the middle of the afternoon.
I know.
Crazy.
Morocco is my kind of place. You get invited over for naps. It's awesome.
How did that friendship with Huria make you feel about your abilities in Arabic?
that was sort of the ultimate test in a way for this book. I really felt like I had done something and I had forged this connection with somebody in a foreign language, and I got her jokes and we shared secrets, and like that's what I had been studying the language for all along, and it happened.
It's funny, the U.S. was hotly in pursuit of Arabic speakers, especially after 9/11, when Washington realized the U.S. needed to better understand what a lot of the world is saying about America. Make the case, though, Zora, why we still need Arabic speakers, and should the rationale still be better intelligence?
Ooh, this is a really thorny issue, actually, because now so much money has been thrown into sort of developing the field of Arabic studies. When I studied in the 1990s, the federal government actually took away our departmental funding, and they were like, oh, areas of national need. No, we're just going to focus on sciences. We don't need foreign languages. Mm. So there's this big swing back the other direction, and it's been great. So many people who were my cohort in graduate school are now still in academia and are benefiting from that. But there's also this slightly creepy feeling of, like, someone I know sort of coined the term of, like, the weaponization of Arabic. Like, the only reason this is being developed is for sort of creepy, to me, needs. And I would love to see that unhooked a bit, and that people would get into studying Arabic just for purely personal, passionate reasons, because that's where the connection is, and that's where you make the real cultural exchange.
Finally, Zora, your name. Your mother gave it to you, and Zora, she told you, is rooted in Arabic. Did she know that at the time? And was your interest in Arabic kind of preordained?
Well, when I started studying Arabic, I thought I was doing it on a whim. And in retrospect, my parents had lived off and on in Morocco in the late 60s. And in my mind, growing up, Morocco was just this singular place through their stories and their anecdotes. And I didn't even connect it with the rest of the Arab world. So it wasn't until I was working on this book that I was like, oh, well, of course, I didn't study Chinese. I didn't study Russian. Right. Like, of course, I had this little connection. And my name is from a woman who my mother really admired because she was an independent woman in Morocco. She was a laundry lady, and she, like, ran her own business, and she was a single mom. And my mom really wanted to give me that independence in my namesake, because even at the time in America, that wasn't very common. So for the book, it was a treat. I was able to bring my parents to Morocco for the first time since
Fantastic.
They'd been there in the late 60s, and that was a really, really
Must have been
joy.
A thrill.
It really was, I think, for all of us.
Zora O'Neill is the author of All Strangers Akin, Adventures in Arabic and the Arab World. Thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, thank you for having me.
We love talking languages on the show, and it's All Language with the World in Words podcast, which reminds me, next week, on June 21st, our World in Words team is hosting a live podcast event at the New York Public Library. Stop by if you're in the city. If not, you can still participate online. Find the team on Twitter @LingoPod and tell them about your own linguistic heritage. This is The World.